From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the mid-1950s in Penfield. Two fifth-grade students were mesmerized when a teacher named Don Natzker built a kind of radio station for the classroom. They could hardly imagine anything more cool, more exciting, and if they were lucky, maybe they could have careers as radio disc jockeys one day. But for at least one of those students, radio didn't really work out. Turns out television has worked out wonderfully. That's because one of those students was Don Alhart, 13 WHAM News anchor who is celebrating 50 years in broadcasting this week. He graduated from Ithaca College in 1966 and went straight to work at Channel 13. And he's not retiring, not even really slowing down. He's become one of the most recognized faces in the Western New York community. When my wife and I were getting ready to move to Rochester in 2002, I was working for the CBS affiliate in Charleston, West Virginia. My wife had locked up a job in the local crime lab. I was moving without a job, and so I asked around, what television news do people watch? We watched Don Alhart, was the most common response. Everyone knows Don. I was fortunate enough to get a job at Channel 13, and he greeted me with the same warmth he greets just about anybody, whether it's, I don't know, the Pope or someone he meets in a grocery store. Never really changes. This hour, I'm honored to welcome Don for a conversation about his career and his budding future in broadcasting.
Yeah, great to be here with you, Evan. This is a wonderful opportunity.
Well, I got to say, I'll get this out of the way. I know you sort of hate talking about you, so I'm really sorry to make you do it for an hour. A lot of people are talking about you and your career, so not necessarily. You're not the person who puts the spotlight on yourself. Yeah. It's not natural for you, but.
Yeah, I think that's probably, as I've talked to people about what I've done over 50 years, they say, what do you enjoy the most? And I think the answer I've come up with most often is I really enjoy putting other people in the spotlight, whether it's the bright spot we do every day, whether it's a feature story, whether it's calling them up on stage at some event that I'm emceeing, the ability to do that. Because someone asked me the other day, what will you miss the most? And I said, that's what I would miss the most, you know, being able to do that for other people, whether it's just a friend, whether it's someone in the audience, whether it's a person with a challenge in their life that I can assist with.
Well, a couple of things to let our listeners know about. There's a one-hour television special coming up. Friday, June 17th, you can set your DVRs. Friday, June 17th at 8 o'clock on 13 WHAM TV. Don Alhart, 50 years of broadcasting, airing on 13 WHAM TV, hosted by Doug Emblidge and Ginny Ryan. And they're going to have all kinds of stuff on how Don got interested in broadcasting as a kid, interviews, and a lot more. So that's next Friday, the 17th at 8 p.m. on 13 WHAM TV. And you can still get tickets if you want to the Alhart at 50 Gala. It's a dinner to celebrate Don Alhart's 50th anniversary on the air. And that's at 6 o'clock this Saturday at the Joseph A. Floriano Rochester Riverside Convention Center. A portion of the funds is going to be donated to the Rochester Rotary Sunshine Camp, which, of course, is close to Don's heart. And tickets are still available there. You can call Kathy Phelps at Dixon Schwabel, 899-3238, if you want to go. So there's still tickets available for that. A couple other quick notes here. You can watch this conversation right now. Hello, viewers, on WXXI News' Facebook page. It's Facebook Live. So Don and I are on our Facebook page, Modern Technology. Don loves technology.
Oh,
we'll talk about that.
That
as well. And some of the background I got, Don, for this, you know, I thought about the work that I had done at 13. I talked to some of your colleagues, read a little bit, watched some of the coverage so far. I thought Jeff DeVeronica's piece in the Democrat and Chronicle was really beautiful. Well done there.
When I first read it online, before it was in print, I said, I have to respond immediately. And I told Jeff, I will respond with a more complete thank you. I just responded with two words, humbled and honored. He did such a superb job on that. And he really was excited about it. I would talk to people that he had talked to, and they would share with me his excitement and what they had to add to the article. And to see it all come together, it was very, very nice.
Yeah, beautifully done. So who was the first broadcaster, radio or television, that you remember hearing or thinking to yourself, yeah, that could be me, I would love to do that?
Probably Buffalo Bob. I don't know if I thought about being on the Howdy Doody show or not, but that was part of my early exposure. My dad ran an appliance and hardware store here in Rochester over on Culver Road by Parcells. So as a youngster, 5, 6 years old, we lived not far from the store. We were the first to have a television set, not because we were wealthy, but my dad sold them. That's what he did for a living. So we had, you know, the TV sets that are probably as big as the ones we have now, but the screen is about the size of what you have in your iPhone. So I was exposed very early. I can remember watching during the day the test pattern on television because it didn't sign on until the afternoon. and watching some of those early shows, you know, Pinky Lee and Kate Smith and Howdy Doody. So I was just fascinated by television. So that plus local television, back then we had one station to start. And I remember growing up, finally two stations. So Tom Decker, I think probably as a news anchor, was the person I...
WROC.
Yeah, I remember the most. I had a chance, a marvelous opportunity out of high school to work as a summer relief engineer at Channel 8. It was Channel 5 then. It was the summer they were moving from Channel 5 to Channel 8 to kind of readjust the dial because Channel 13 was signing on the air, ironically. And I had a chance to work as a summer relief engineer for three summers. And when I was first hired, I wasn't sure what they were going to have me do because I wasn't that accomplished as an engineer. By the time I left, I would, if a studio cameraman was on vacation, I'd do that for a week. If the audio person was on vacation, I would do that for a week. So I got to be the cameraman for Tom Decker every once in a while. And just watching the way he would communicate the news, and I use that word more than read the news, I watched him kind of in a conversational style. So I think that was probably a part of my early influence in terms of what broadcasting was. And from a radio standpoint, you know, Nick Nixon, we all remember from, from WBBF, you know, you betcha, you know. He was on my paper route. So I would, I was just, you know, marvel. I would kind of back time my collecting once a week to make sure. He worked 4 to 7. I would not get to that house till 7:45. So I was sure he was home. And I could catch a glimpse of him at the kitchen table from the front door just to see Nick Nixon. So, you know, listening to radio, you know, Jack Palvino and Nick Nixon, and watching television, I think probably not only formed the basis for an eventual style, but formed the basis for the community involvement. These are people who stayed here for long periods of time, some of them born and raised here. And I think that influence kind of paralleled the career itself.
Well, you mentioned with Tom Decker, appreciating him as a communicator, communicating the news, not reading the news. And I think that is so important in this industry. In your industry, you have to be able to talk to people in a way that doesn't feel like you're just reading a script or, you know, sometimes we call a broadcast speak, you know, official speak. We have to, we try to get that out of there. But you were, you felt that very early on that you wanted to be a great communicator?
I think so. I think, you know, just the way we interact with people one-to-one should be the way we interact with people in a large group. I'm not sure I ever did this when you started, but I've done it with many reporters who first come to the newsroom and they go, any advice? And the only advice I offer off the top is go to the mall, sit in a chair, and watch the people. And just sit there for 20 minutes. And they go, why? I said, because when you write your next story, those are the people you're talking to. And if you stopped them in the mall and told them about a fire or an accident or even a political story, if you stopped them in the mall and told them about it, how would you word it? And then put those words down on paper because that's what they will relate to. And the fancy words we sometimes use to impress other journalists may not be the ones that really get through to the people we're trying to get through to.
Sure, but there's an interesting dichotomy that we've joked before, and I've joked with Gary Craig at the Democrat and Chronicle and others, that the old saw is that if you work in broadcast news, it's because you know, you're too dumb to write. And if you work in newspapers, you're not good-looking enough to be on television. Yeah. Don is the person who can do all of those things. When did you write your first poem? Were you a poem writer in school?
My father used to write poems.
Your dad did?
He would write poems for my mother. So we always had that kind of a, you know, simple little rhyming pattern. So my father was probably the early influence in that. My best friend, Pete Burrell, out in California, who has been quoted in the article and is coming in for the gala, remembers every Christmas I would go to their home, I think on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, I think it was, and I would write a poem that would outline the gifts I had brought for various members of their family. It was just kind of a, you know, something that was instilled in me that, and they're simple poems. I remember once going to a reading. I was asked to MC a reading of a local poetry society. And someone when they introduced me, they say Don writes poems, but his rhyme. And so it wasn't like they're not real poems.
Lowbrow, right?
It's not the poetry that we're here for. His are those simple little poems that rhyme. But they're sometimes the fun ones to do. And as people know, I've done them at some events
and on the air occasionally.
Yeah, on the air, it's just kind of a fun way people. react to poetry. And sometimes the spontaneity of it is what they react to the most, the fact you've been able to put something together on the spot. That one started, it was Elixir Hospital, brought in so many. And I reflected on this the other day of the people I've been able to meet over the years, and a lot of them because of the Lakeside Hospital Foundation dinner. And Colin Powell was here and presented me with a little red wagon lapel pin. He had formed this little red wagon society to help people. And I was sitting at the head table, and something about that little red wagon inspired me to write a 4 or 5 verse poem. And I ended the dinner with that poem. The next year, I thought I was off the hook, and people said, "You're going to do another poem." And so that became the tradition only at that dinner, where I would sit at the head table, and people often thought me rude because they'd say, "The speaker is speaking, and Don's up there writing notes and letters. What's he doing?" I was trying to write a poem on the spot that would reflect things that happened, things that person said in their speech, and then end the program with that. That's carried over to a few other events now, and it's probably, if you had to ask me, the most pressure I ever feel in a public performance, it is that, because you figure, if I don't get this done in time, I'm going to be in trouble at the end of this gathering.
Yeah, I should also peel back the curtain a little and say, for anyone who's ever had to leave a job, may you have someone like Don in the office, because yeah. Don digs into some of the dirt and then writes this beautiful poem to send you off. And that's always the odes. Yeah. It's always great fun. But it's interesting that you say that's the most pressure you feel, because you know your colleague Jenny Ryan said in that video with the Democrat and Chronicle that you know until maybe 10 years ago she still felt a little nervous. You know, being on, I don't know if she's embellishing, but being on the desk next to Don Elhart. Even in the early days, did you feel pressure with Dick Byrd around? Did you feel?
I felt more pressure when I look back at some of that early footage now, and it's interesting to me because I look, and there's only one clip that just seems to be coming up. It's with Connie Mitchell, who was still in our community, and she was running. It could have been for the county legislature, and I think it's me standing with a microphone there saying, "Will you continue to support the Liberal nominee now that you don't have the nomination," or something to that effect. I probably had that question written on a piece of paper or an index card and read it verbatim, because I would not do even a taped or filmed interview back then without that kind of preparation. And I look at it now and say, you know, you can't do that. You have to be more relaxed. But I think I probably was, you know, that was a day when we didn't grow up with this technology. You know, you didn't grow up as a child. It was a thrill for me to go to my father's store once when Clarabelle the Clown was there from Howdy Doody, and they brought in this black and white camera and hooked it up to a TV set. And to see yourself on television was a thrill. People grow up with that now, and I think are probably a little more comfortable in front of the camera because that's something they've kind of become accustomed to.
My guest is Don Elhart, celebrating 50 years in broadcasting this week, and there are a couple of events coming up. A gala dinner to celebrate Don's 50th anniversary on the air is 6 o'clock on Saturday. And you can still get tickets if you want to go and attend and enjoy that event, and a portion of the funds is going to be donated to the Rochester Rotary Sunshine Camp. That is at 6 o'clock at the Floriana Rochester Riverside Convention Center on the Saturday. And then if you want to set your DVRs for next Friday night at 8 p.m. on 13 WAM TV, it's an hour-long special looking at Don's career. Some fun interviews there. Now, a lot's been made, and I'm sure the special will touch on the fact that you have never taken a sick day in 50 years. And by the way, Don, you know, I see articles, doctors saying more people need to take more sick days. So I don't know if you're, but we won't focus too much on that because Don's getting a little superstitious about that. I would be less impressed by that if I had found out that after you graduated from Ithaca, well, you took a gap year, or you traveled, or you went to Europe.
You took a gap day.
You know, you graduated on a Saturday, and you started on a Monday at 13.
Graduated on June 4th, 1966. Came home on Sunday, and went to Channel 13, 6666, and started that career.
Didn't even think about taking any time off?
I don't know, no, because I was just anxious to get back. I had worked there the summer before, in 1965. I mentioned I worked 3 summers at Channel 8 as an engineer, and that fourth summer before I graduated, I said, I really want to see if I can do something on the air. Almost had a job at what was then WHEC Radio. They had an opening, but then they had a shuffling around and didn't have an opening. And I went over to Channel 13. I've told this story, but they had an opening for a news reporter. There were only four people in the news department. Ray Laws was anchoring, Dick Burt was there, and Harriet Bishop was the reporter, and Joe Palladino was the photographer. That was it. And Harriet Bishop was leaving. They needed a full-time reporter. And I had gone to Channel 13 to apply for what was then just a booth announcing job. You would, you know, be in the booth, and in between shows, you were the voice that said, Channel 13, Rochester, New York. And they told me I didn't have the sound for it. It didn't sound like an announcer. The timbre was the word they used, you know. And I didn't. I sounded like a little kid back then. And so they said, go down to the news department. They might have an opening. They did have an opening, but not for a part-time job. They wanted someone full-time. And I kind of made a deal with them. I said, look, hire me for the summer and keep looking for your full-time replacement. And if in the middle of August or whenever it is, July, you get that person, I'll be done. I'd rather work 3-4 weeks as a reporter than the entire summer because I want to try this out. Stayed there the whole summer. And then, of course, at the end of the summer, they said, well, maybe, you know, do you really want to go back to school? And I said, well, yeah, I think I'd like to finish up my degree. Well, we can't guarantee there'll be anything when you're done. I said, well, I'll take my chances. And sure enough, graduation was coming, and I contacted them again. And they said, yeah, we're gonna expand the news department from 4 to 5 people, and and we welcome you on as a reporter. So I was so pleased and anxious that I just said, I'll be there, you know, Monday after graduation.
Who needs summer break?
Yeah.
And I also recall 2007, I'm anchoring the morning news, and they said, well, we booked a segment with this guy from RIT. He's going to talk about this new iPhone. The iPhone had come out. We did a segment on the morning show about it, and I thought, well, this is silly. Why does anybody want a computer on their phone? And so when I heard your colleague Doug Emblidge's story about cell phones, I wanted to share it. Here's what Doug Emblidge told the Democrat and Chronicle about Don Elhart, technology lover.
It was 1988, September 10th of 1988, the day my second child was born, and we were at a Channel 13 wedding reception. Now, previously, because I am an investment genius, I told him these cell phones were going to fall flat on their face. No one was going to be connected, want to be connected 24 hours a day, and that this thing was just a bust. Of course, he had one of the big bricks, you know. And so we get to the Channel 13 wedding reception. My wife was a week and a half, maybe overdue, for the birth of our second child. And her water breaks as she's getting out of our car at the wedding reception. She gets back in the car and says, we have to go to the hospital. I, of course, go into the father mode. I'm like, oh, we got to call some. And who's walking by? Don Elhart, only guy I know who owns a cell phone. Which he then showed me how to use, and I called the doctor or the hospital or whatever it was. And so after that, I realized Don knows. Just trust in Don. If he says cell phones are going to take off, they will.
So have you always loved gadgetry?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think from what we talked about, that growing up in the store, you know, a microphone, I would almost sometimes make up phone calls so I could key the microphone and say, you know, hardware, call on 6. I mean, just to hear my voice coming out of the PA. I mean, was that kind of, I was just fascinated with all of the technology. So, you know, if there was a new phone coming out, or in this case, you know, it was like this, it was the size of a small VCR that we used to carry around. But I had to try this technology.
Well, you're 50 years, you've seen a ton of change.
Yeah.
Your news director, Chuck Samuels, told me the story when, you know, there was some disruptive force in the newsroom and everyone was saying, we can't do it. I don't even remember what it was. But Chuck said, you know, when computers came into the newsroom, people said, this is not going to work. We have a system. We've got typewriters. We know how it works. And we kind of got a good laugh at that. But what to you has been the most disruptive, the biggest change in technology 50 years to now?
You know, I think probably, you know, it's almost every day there's new change. As I look at each, you know, for me at the time, going from black and white film to color film was a major change. You know, to be able to bring the news to people in living color was just fantastic. So every little change has come along. To take a sound movie camera that had to be plugged into the wall and then be able to, at the time it was called a Fresolini conversion. This man named Fresolini had found a way to take your sound movie camera and put a battery on the back of it so you could carry it around. So that was an innovation. Of course, then we went to tape, and then we went to digital. So every little technical, you know, step in technology along the way has been phenomenal.
All for the good, by the way?
I think for the most part, although I think it has put more of a burden on us over the years, the immediacy now, when I look back, I talk often about the Attica prison uprising in 1971. And I remember being sent down there in a news car with a black and white film camera. And now I had to drive from Rochester to Attica, cover perhaps a news conference outside that was being held, and then get back in the car, drive back to Rochester, give the film to the processor, and that would take an hour or so to process before we could look at that and put it on the air. During all of that time, we had a lot of time to put things in perspective, to get more information, much as we did with the riots. I was at Channel 8 when we covered some of the riots here in Rochester and even some of the post-riots at 13. And again, we had that time factor where you would send a film crew out, and while the film was being processed, make the calls, put it in perspective, not jump the gun in trying to get something on the air. Now, of course, with the technology we have, I mean, the big trucks that we use for broadcasting are obsolete now. I was at the Eastman House last night covering the Rochester Rotary Award dinner, and we did a live bright spot at the end of the news. Doug was anchoring the news. I was in the corner of the auditorium with the photographer with a backpack about the size of that first cell phone I was talking about. And I was live on the air. And people are walking by, and when they were done, they say, well, I thought you were going to do a live. I said, I did. And they couldn't believe that we had that technology to do that. So, and getting back to the point now, I think what that has done, and I see us very carefully now. We're very careful because we're on the news set now, monitoring Twitter, looking at the emails we're getting. We have to be very careful. There was an incident last night, a man holed up in an apartment out in Ontario County. And one report that he had weapons and they were concerned about it. We saw that on Twitter. Now we have to sit there and wait a minute. Do we know this from any other place? Well, no. So we held off. Then it was confirmed. Then we went with it. So with the technology and the ability now of people, I mean, look at a television newscast today. I would dare say 20% to 30% of the video you see on a newscast on given days come from viewers. That cell phone video, because they're the first on the scene when something bursts into flames or something happens or somebody's doing something. And again, you have to vet that very carefully. We don't often know. We can't just put that on the air because somebody sends it in. We have to make sure it's legitimate video.
Sure. And you mentioned just the immediacy of Twitter, for example.
Yeah.
There's an expectation that if reporters are in a courtroom, they're going to try to tweet. Obviously, there have been some conversations with judges about what's allowed and what's not. Or if they're on the scene of whatever news event, that immediacy is what some news consumers expect now.
Yeah.
But people may not know, you are 50 years in the broadcast business, but you're also an associate news director. Are there written standards or at least conversations about, you know, the care that reporters need to take? Because like you said, there's not driving back from Attica, processing film, talking about the story, thinking about it, writing it. Twitter is instantaneous. And you've got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And how? Tell me about some of those conversations.
Yeah, I think we've become more aware of that. Now, you know, and of course, when we know, it's our reporter tweeting something out from a courtroom. Now we know that's our source. We know their handle. We know it's a legitimate account. I'm not totally familiar, but I know, I think on Twitter and Facebook now, there's a little check mark that a lot of us have next to our names, or so that people know it's the real person. Our owners, our broadcasting company had to verify whom we are so that we could put that in there. So I think in that case we will know who it is. But I think now we've almost gone to the other extreme where we're very, very careful. I think the first thing you'll hear in a newsroom now when something like that comes across Twitter or Facebook, have we vetted this? Do we know this for sure? We don't want to put this on the air until we know. And somebody said, well, another station might be doing it. Well, maybe they were able to get it, verify before we did. But we really have to verify it ourselves before we will go with it.
Generally speaking, do you have any discomfort with your own reporters tweeting at something that's unfolding in real time?
Yeah.
Do you have any discomfort? Is that too immediate?
I don't think so, because a lot of times it's our source. It's what we're knowing, what's going on. And even Facebook Live now, a lot of times we will put up a news conference so that we can monitor it and not have to wait for that chip to come back with the details.
Well, that's how a lot of younger viewers, but also people of all ages are consuming news now.
Yeah.
Some of them are using online sources pretty exclusively, mobile devices. Some of them are using maybe too much Facebook or Twitter just as a sole source of news there. And I can recall, Don, maybe 10 years ago, I think your news, your general manager, the news director at the time, Chuck Samuels, has always been the kind of guy who's trying to be forward-thinking.
Yeah.
And I think that's benefited Channel 13 for a long time. And the conversations were, you know, roughly, are the 5, 6, and 11, are people still going to wait to consume news in that way? Can they still exist and be complemented by sort of mobile news? Or do we need to scrap them and start with a whole new model? And, of course, we haven't scrapped them. You're 6 and 11 still your shows. But are they going to exist 10, 25 years from now?
You know, I think we have to adapt to that. And I think that's probably the biggest change, if you ask me, over the years that I've seen evolve from when I started until now. There was a time when I would look at the 6 o'clock news and say, this is the newscast of record for the day. And not that this is before we had 5 o'clock and everything else. So that was the first evening newscast of the day. And I think Dick Burt and I, if you look back at some of the early interviews, our responsibility was to tell you what happened today, what you should know about, what you may want to know about that happened in your community, because that was our job. We were the town crier. And I think that has kind of been my philosophy for almost all of the 50 years. But I've noticed now I've got to change. And I talk to people. We had a young group of college students come through the station a few months ago. And I ask the question every time, how many of you grew up in a home where your parents watch the 6 o'clock news every night, and all the hands go up? And I said, how many of you watch it now? Nobody. Maybe one. And the difference is they know what's happened today. And so when we put on a 6 o'clock newscast, I'm not there anymore to tell you what happened today. You already know that. You've seen it on your phone. You've gotten the alert. I'm there to perhaps give you a little perspective on it. Again, not from an editorial standpoint. I have to, you know, be very down the middle of the road. But I'm to give you a little more background, a little more understanding to the story. So, yes, we still tell you what happened, but we have to do a little more than that because you already have that information.
Are you consuming news through mobile? What's your daily news consuming habit?
Yeah, I think a lot of, you know, the phone. I end up, just the alerts on the phone, I think probably I get more news or learn of more news immediately off the phone. Obviously, in contact with the newsroom on email, you know, I get a lot from that. And then checking other news websites. I think most of what I do, you know, I go back to the time where I still remember, you know, obviously the newsroom when I started had that AP machine in the corner of the room clicking away 24 hours a day, and you go over and, nobody's cleared this machine. Why is the paper piling up on the floor? And rip it off, divide it, and put the sports on the sports peg and the state news on the state peg and the world news on the world news peg. And look at it, you know, in capsule summaries. Now it comes in bits and pieces on the phone and through a lot of alerts on the computer throughout the day.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour, and I'm already looking at the time going, I wish I had 2 hours here. So we're going to try to move quickly. Don mentioned Facebook Live. Maybe you're watching on WXXI News Facebook Live. You can watch this conversation there on our WXXI News page, and we're seeing a lot of comments. Mandy says, Don, you're a staple of Rochester like Abbott's or a garbage plate. You never thought you'd be compared to a garbage
Which one?
Plate. I don't know if that's a pejorative or not,
yeah.
Mandy. Mary says, Don, you're the best. Congratulations on the first 50 years. Pauline says Don was wonderful in helping Camp Nacora, NACORA,
yes,
by donating hundreds of T-shirts that showed every Friday. So thanks for that. And Kaylin says, Don, you're my Silver Fox crush. So, okay. So a lot of wide variety of comments there. Let's get our only break, and we're going to come back and so much more to talk about with Don Alhard, who is celebrating 50 years in broadcasting in Rochester, in his hometown, this week. And you can see a one-hour special next Friday night at 8 p.m. on 13WAM TV that has even more. Short break and more next. Coming up in our second hour, school is almost out for summer. In the city of Rochester, that is not necessarily a good thing, especially in single-parent households and for families where there are challenges in just making sure kids have basic resources and that there isn't a summer learning gap. Teachers are worried about that, but there are new efforts underway to help kids keep learning and maintain what they've learned and close the literacy gap. All of that next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Don Elhart, my guest in studio. Looking back at 50 years, is there a single story as a journalist that you've covered that you're either most proud of or that stands out to you in your 50 years?
You know, sometimes the little stories. One we won, I won a writing award for was an accident on 390. I don't think anyone was injured, but it was a chocolate syrup truck that had tipped over. And the photographer came back. I did not cover the story. The photographer came back and said, I've got this tremendous footage. There's just chocolate all over the place. And I can't remember at all what I wrote. I do remember analogies, like they were, because there were tires in the road covered with chocolate, so it looked like chocolate covered donuts. I remember writing to his pictures,
gift wrapped.
So I mean, it was all there. I did nothing but look at video and say, this looks like this, this looks like that, and weave it all together. And we won a writing award for it, mostly because of what he had shot more than what I had put into words. I think the bright spots that we keep seeing. And it wasn't even a bright spot at the time. It was just a feature story. I used to love going out with photographer Tom Marini at the time. And oftentimes, we had no story for the day. And we would just delight in finding one. One of the ones we've been alerted to was a woman by the name of Glenna Oberdorf, who was, this is back before the walks for this or that or any marathons, and she had just decided she was going to set a record rocking in a rocking chair to raise money for charity. And, of course, I was all ambitious, so I went down there, and we ended up doing an interview with her while we were in the rocking chairs, trying to keep the rocking chairs in sync. I put it to the Bill Haley and the Comets, Rock Around the Clock, so we had shots of her and the music. And it's probably the most fun story I can remember looking back at, or at least one of the most. There are so many of them over the years.
Some journalists feel it's their job to be, I don't know if confrontational is the right word, but sort of to build a wall between a newsroom and people in positions of power, whether it's political, business, or elsewhere. You know, you've done countless interviews over the years. Mm-hmm. And to me, your style is warm, friendly, inviting. But of course, you've had times where you've had to be a little more firm. How do you balance sort of your own instinct to be warm and friendly with people to those occasions where you have to be firm with an interviewee?
Yeah, and what I've always found, and maybe it's it probably if I had a weakness, it might be a journalistic, I wouldn't call it a journalistic cop-out, but I guess I just did. But I think sometimes just being honest with people and using the person, you have to be yourself. I'm not a confrontational person, so it's not my nature in an interview to be a confrontational person. You know, people know that in the newsroom. I can't recall raising a voice very often to express an opinion in the newsroom. But I do feel an obligation on behalf of the viewers sometimes to get more out of a story or out of an interview. And for me, it's been simply the phrasing of a question sometimes, simply saying, I understand your point of view, but there are those in this community who feel that maybe you should have done this instead. How do you respond to them? How do you answer them? So I've asked the question. I've maybe used a little more time to ask it, but I've kind of phrased it on behalf of, my job is not me. Your job is not to give me an answer. Your job is to give my viewers an answer. So on behalf of them, I'm their extension. I'm asking you what I think is on their mind.
You get turned off by shouting matches, the cable news style shouting matches?
It's almost the point now where sometimes you just kind of, you get used to them. I think sometimes we, and it's a whole different arena now, obviously on the national level with the reporters and how, the back and forth between candidates and the reporting people, it takes us back to, it happened years ago. I mean, remember Dan Rather, confronting Nixon, and that was very unusual. Now it's just kind of the the accepted norm that these people are out there, and it's not. I think at the end of the day, you look, what was really accomplished other than a little grandstanding, perhaps? And with the amount of competition now, and I think we're seeing this in the media, we're seeing it, obviously in politics. There is so much out there. There are so many outlets out there that the ones that want to survive find ways to call attention to themselves in ways they might not have done years prior, just so they can can be the one that is remembered.
Well, Congress, of course, gets poor ratings from the American public, but American journalism doesn't get very good ratings from the public. People are sort of pessimistic about the state of the journalism industry. Are you?
I think we have some challenges. I think it's very difficult right now. Sometimes to be as objective as we want to be, we have to pursue people. I think, and again, I don't want to narrow this just to politicians, but I think we've seen it in this community. There is this feeling on the part of journalists now that people need to respond to the concerns of the community. And I think if I feel uncomfortable at times, it's a two-way street. I find myself saying, so-and-so ought to just sit down and talk with us and be done with this. Because if they don't, the next time they go to cut the ribbon at the Lilac Festival, the reporters aren't going to be talking about the flowers. They're going to be talking about this latest controversy. And so we kind of ambush the person. And then what happens? They kind of retreat. They don't show up because they don't want to face the reporters. So it's interesting. I have a panel discussion I have to do this week for a private company talking about dealing with the media and what people should do. And part of that, I think, will be that discussion of, you know, how do you handle reporters, what do they want to know, and what's the best way to deal with that so that everybody wins and you can move on rather than sometimes drag these issues over and over again.
I have no idea what you could be referring to.
Are they vague enough? Yeah. Probably not.
Don Elhart celebrating 50 years in broadcasting in Rochester, and he's my guest for the hour. And a couple of events coming up that you should know about. There's a gala on Saturday, not only celebrating Don's 50th anniversary, but benefiting the Rochester Rotary Sunshine Camp. Tickets still available, and that's at 6 p.m. on Saturday at the Joseph A. Floriano Rochester Riverside Convention Center. And then next Friday night at 8 o'clock on 13 WHAM TV, it's an hour-long special hosted by Doug Emblidge and Jenny Ryan, chronicling Don's 50 years in broadcasting. And I know the work they do. I'm sure it's going
to
be
I hesitate stuff. To bring this up for the gala because knowing your experience with the guitar, but I did in high school play guitar in terms of the four or five chords I needed to be the rhythm guitar.
And I You're dusting it off?
Still have my Stratocaster, my Fender Strat, the White Strat, and the Sky Coasters who are playing at the gala.
You're coming on with them, aren't you? Yes!
Johnny Be Good. So I have to make sure I still can do those few chords that I need.
There you go.
But we did that once. We did it once before at the Chocolate Ball years ago, and they never asked either one of us back. So I don't know what that means.
I think that's worth the price of admission.
Yeah, so we could have some fun with that.
Don, in your 50 years, we've seen a lot change. And in any career that is 50 years in the same place, you're going to see people come and go to different markets, to different industries, different jobs, and sometimes you see people pass away. You mentioned recently, you think about Bill Peterson still just about every day?
Yeah. I walk in that building, and I look up sometimes just at the radar dome, which we don't even use anymore. We have a different radar, but they haven't taken it off the tower. And I remember him doing a story about it once or looking up and talking about it. I think that spirit is still there. It's the same spirit, same feeling I get when I go to the Riverside Convention Center. Joe Floriano was a very good friend. I can't walk in that building without looking for him and without feeling his presence. And I think we need that at times. I think we need that as human beings to keep those people in our hearts and keep our focus in perspective. Bill just had that way about him, and there are a lot of times when things go wrong, and they do in broadcasting. I mean, it was ironic. I started my 51st year with the 6 o'clock news on Monday. That was my anniversary day, 6 o'clock newscast, start of a whole other half century, and the teleprompter went out and didn't work for the first four or five stories. And I sat there and I said, first, this is the way I started 50 years ago. Yeah, we didn't have a teleprompter. And secondly, I always, when those situations happen, say, what would Bill do? And Bill would just roll with it. Bill would be honest with the viewer. Sometimes we get the most nervous when we're trying to hide something.
Pretend
nothing's wrong. And Bill would always, I can always remember not only the time he laughed on the air, but one time just in spontaneous, he was at the map showing the radar and he goes, and the showers have now moved a little bit north of Syracuse. So if you left here an hour ago and were heading up toward Watertown, you wouldn't be watching me because you're already gone. I mean, he was thinking out loud and he realized this makes no sense. And so oftentimes, you know, we just start laughing because I say, something goes wrong. I, you know, Bill would just be honest with viewers. And I was at the point the other night because I put my glasses on. I can't read the copy in front of me without my glasses. And I put my glasses on. And had I gone one or two more stories or we got into a commercial break, I would have said to the viewers, by the way, the teleprompter isn't working, and that's why I'm wearing the glasses, rather than have people go, why does he have those on? He's got them on for one moment, he took them off for the next. So I think that spirit is still there, and again, just the spirit of I'm enjoying what you do.
Well, I think a couple things. First of all, you talk about, you know, going into the Riverside Convention Center and thinking of Joe, and sometimes welcoming that moment of reflection, sometimes that sadness.
Yeah.
You know, you're a technology guy, as we've been talking about. Comedian Louis C.K. said, the detriment of modern technology is it allows us to escape our own feelings and our own sadness. He said, there's a lot of sadness in life, and that's okay. But whenever we start to feel sad, we can dive into Twitter. I haven't checked email in 48 seconds. And we don't grapple with those emotions.
Yeah.
You seem, more than most people I know, to be able to love modern technology, but to still embrace some of that sadness. We've lost Bill. We've lost Joe. You've lost friends. And, you know, you're not going to be sad every moment. Sometimes it's happy. But I think that balance is sort of important, and you seem to embody that.
And I think it becomes a part of your ability to communicate with people, because if you lose that sense, if you lose that feeling, then you're not going to be a good communicator. If you don't, if you try to shut yourself out or rise above it, you know, I've always, somebody said to me the other night, last night, I was at a gathering, he said, I watched you Monday night, and, you know, we ended the anniversary show with my granddaughter on my lap. A bright spot, my wife at my side, and I kissed my wife at the end of the show and made the statement that 50 years wouldn't have been possible without her support. And I had a tear in my eye, and this person said, you looked a little emotional at the end. And I said, yeah, I was. Now, I could have chosen not to give her a kiss. I could have chosen not to say anything about her and tried to maintain my composure and be that anchor man, but that wouldn't have been me. And I think if I've had any success, if somebody said to me over 50 years, I think it's me. And I'm flattered when other people say it. I've heard Doug say it. I've heard Glenn say it. I've heard Mike Catalano say it. The guy you see on the air is the guy we see in the newsroom.
It's a huge compliment.
And that, to me, means the most. I think the most emotional this week. And I said this the other day. You know, I didn't really think about it that much. And I've always said, people say, well, you know, when won't you want to go? You know, when will you give this up? And I say, well, if I get out of the car in the parking lot someday and I look at the door and I go, I don't think I want to go in there. I said, that'll be the day. That day hasn't come. And on Monday, I got out of the car and I kind of put myself to the test. I said, this is 50 years. So I didn't go in right away. I got out of the car and I stood in the parking lot. I looked at the building. I looked at the door. And I said, all right, Don, you've always said if you don't want to go in, you don't have to go in. You've done your 50 years. I opened the door, I walked in the newsroom, and everybody in the newsroom stood up and applauded. And I just teared up and stood there. I mean, it was a simple little thing, but it was just, that meant a lot. And I think it just means a lot if people realize who you are, and that somehow got through over 50 years, I couldn't ask for anything more.
And here's what I'm also sort of concerned about when I think about you and Bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bill was, I agree just from watching Bill. I didn't get the chance to work with Bill. And he passed away, what year did he pass away, Don?
We look it up the other day. It's on my phone all the time.
Yeah, so Bill passed away shortly after I got here, but of course he was this legend that everybody had known about. And you see all these great moments. And you know, Bill would not be accused by modern consultants of having a TV wardrobe. You know, he had great ties and, you know, he had his own style. And he was willing to roll with it and willing to laugh and go off the rails. And people appreciated that. My concern, and this is where I hope you're going to tell me I'm wrong. My concern is that if a Bill Peterson walked in for an interview today, because of the modern consultants and you have to look this way, you have to talk this way, you have to sound this way, that he might not get a job. And I hope that's wrong.
It might be, you know, it could be a challenge. By the way, I just looked at it, I carried on my phone. Bill Peterson died August 5th, 2006.
2006, yeah.
So it goes back, it goes back quite a way. I'll get back to your point, because that reminds me of the day he died. He was on a ventilator at Strong. And I had visited him during the week, and he said to the family, I want Don here when we pull the plug. And I said, I don't know if I can handle that. And it was a Saturday morning. He said, I picked the time. Saturday morning at noon. He said he chose the time when because that was it. I said I would be there. 10 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call. It's his son. And he said, my dad says that most of the time you are always 15 to 20 minutes late for whatever you do. He said, and my dad says, don't be late today.
Wow.
I mean, you talk about a bit of humor and a huge dose of emotion.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I drove to the hospital. I stood there, watched him touch the stomach of his daughter-in-law, the first grandchild that he would never see. There have been many since that he's never seen. And said my goodbyes and then watched him die. The family handed me a book and said, would you please read this poem? And I can't tell you now what it was. I have never been challenged to read something out loud like that in my life. Somehow I got through it, and somehow we got through the days that followed. But it was, certainly a challenging moment. It would be difficult now. We've gone. You know, I put a picture up on Facebook the other day of the three TV weathermen in town, Chuck Stevens, Bob Bills, and me. I don't think any of us had any experience in meteorology. I think John Hamilton was probably the first one at Channel 10 years ago that was a meteorologist. And all of a sudden, that became the gold standard. You had to be a meteorologist. And Bill was. He was a meteorologist in the Air Force, so he certainly had the credibility. I would hope that the personality is still going to play a role because I think we see it. And everybody has a different personality. Glenn's is different than Bill's was. But you have to, I think, bring out the naturalness in people. And if there's a goodness and a natural flair that's there, I think it's going to prevail. I often tell people, if you go to a new city you've never been to before, you pick out a newscast to watch, you don't know who's number one. You don't know who's got the most journalistic awards. You don't know any of that. You look at the people and you watch the ones you like to look at. You look at the people that look like they might be somebody you'd want to know. And if you can accomplish that, I think you're gonna come out ahead.
A couple more minutes here and just some listener questions. Just a reminder, he's not retiring.
No,
not
that's
even
true.
Slowing down yet. but Don celebrating 50 years on the air this week here. Lisa on Facebook, it's been wonderful growing up on TV with Don. Robert on Facebook says, Rochester's own Walter Cronkite. Email from Mark says, you had Maggie go from TV to politics, now Rachel Barnhart, Don Alhart for president. You ever, politics, ever possible?
Years ago, I talked to Rachel about this. I ran into her the other day. Years ago, well, not that many years ago, but I was approached to consider a run for Congress in this area. This goes back a number of years. And never really talked about it and looked into it. I was in an age where I said, if I would consider this and do this and not be successful, I was too young to retire and I would not go back to journalism. You can't, it's different now. You might be able to do that. Back then, I said, I can't be, I often have said probably the biggest compliment I get and when people come up and say, I've watched you all these years and I don't know what side of the aisle you're on. I don't know your political philosophy. I try to be that objective, and you have to be on the air. So I said, if I ever were to make that step, I couldn't do it and ended up not doing it. So it was a thought. It was a consideration. I said, but you know what? At the end of the day, I really enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy the lifestyle and schedule I have now and probably wouldn't change that.
All right. 20 seconds. We can't do this in 20 seconds. Let's do a bright spot in 20 seconds because we had listeners saying thank you for the bright spot.
Yeah.
In our final 20 seconds, bright spot among your most proud accomplishments?
I think so. Marv Jacoby was the one who suggested that years ago. He said to me, you want to have a bright spot on the news. And so we did it. And my basic premise is whatever happens on any day, you can find a bright spot.
Well, Don, you've been, it's lame to say this, but you've been a bright spot for this community. That just understates it. But it's been my honor having you for the hour here. And I hope listeners, if you want to go out on Saturday, there are still tickets available for the gala dinner to celebrate Don Ehlhardt's 50 years on the air. The first 50 years. I love that, by the way. 6 p.m. at the Riverside Convention Center, the Floriana Riverside Convention Center on Saturday. And then next Friday night, 8 p.m. on 13 WHAM TV. It's a one-hour special. Ehlhardt's 50 years in broadcasting. Thank you, Don.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for setting such a great example for me and so many other broadcasters in this community. Short break. More Connections next.